You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenzi. Worked on a program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. It's Wednesday, which means we're talking football, just like we do on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Fridays. But Mark Lawrence will step up at InPlaybook.com's Mark Lawrence. We're going to focus in on the National Football League. Emory Hunt joins us. FootballGamePlan.com's Emory Hunt. We're going to talk NFL football and college football with Emory Hunt. We're talking college football with Rich Sermonello. So if you like football, we've got you covered on today's program. We'll get you set. We've got a ton of best bets, look-aheads, starting to lock in these games right now. You know, earlier in the week, I had a couple of leans. Now we're midweek, and I still have the same leads. We'll see where we are late week. I sort of go in three phases. Initial phase, midweek phase, lock it down phase. We got the Green Bay Packers and the Chicago Bears on the board on Thursday night football. Not a great game, but you know, it'll be an Aaron Rodgers love fest, right? And it'll be a heavy survivor pick for people that are still alive in their survivor pool. So, yeah, we're talking football on the program today. They're dropping the puck in the NHL regular season. Preseason's already begun. They played their first home game last night in Las Vegas. LA Kings ended up getting it done in overtime. And, you know, I never really thought about it, what the abbreviation was going to be, but it's VGS. I don't like that. VGS, you know, it sounds like a Vietnamese basketball team. You know, VGS basketball. Or it sounds like an STD. Man, I got VGS, man. You know, like, really? Well, how about LAS? Loss. I'm not down with this VGS thing. You know, it's funny because I complain about people complaining about things that they shouldn't complain about. But for some reason, it kind of bothers me. It's like, I don't know, man, really? I don't want to be looking at VGS for the rest of my life as the abbreviation. You know, what the hell? LAS, pretty freaking simple. Are there any LASs in the team? No. All right. So, they're dropping the puck. NBA basketball around the corner. Of course, college basketball bombshells yesterday. Rick Pitino's out. Rick Pitino just got fired a couple hours ago right now. But we're talking college football with Rich Sermonello. So let's get right down to business. Now, I was planning on opening up the show and using my monologue to discuss the bombshell that went down in the college basketball world yesterday. Four big-time assistant coaches, big-time schools, man. Auburn's, Tennessee's, the USC's of the world. Arizona, man. Big-time college basketball programs, assistant coaches charged by the FBI. Now, Rick Pitino and Louisville were not charged by the FBI, but they were Team 6 that were part of this, part of the racket, so to speak. And, long story short, basically this kid was locked in. He was going to go to Michigan State. Except right out of the blue, he changed his mind and he went to Louisville. And it turned out that a sleazeball at Adidas gave $100,000 allegedly to an assistant coach in Louisville who passed on the money to the kid's family. And then the kid mysteriously ended up in Louisville. Of course, Rick Pitino knew nothing about it. Just like Rick Pitino knew nothing about the hookers that were servicing the recruits. Just like Rick Pitino knew nothing about the girl that was servicing him in his office, Bill Clinton style. I didn't know that. Yeah, I don't know. I was so busy coaching, I didn't realize there was a chick under my desk. I think enough is enough. So, you know, you had a mistress deal. Oh, yeah, she tried to extort him as well. You had a prostitution scandal and ring going on with Louisville basketball. And now they're caught red-handed giving $100,000 to a kid. I was going to talk about that. But I don't know, man. You know, finding out that, you know, college basketball coaches are corrupt and that the world of college sports is corrupt isn't exactly groundbreaking news. The fact that the feds shut him down actually is. But nevertheless, let's move on to a story I just stumbled upon a couple hours ago. I didn't realize this. Yesterday, the Yankees played the Rays, okay? And a fan got kicked out of Yankee Stadium, man. A fan got kicked out. And yeah, you're wondering, well, so, yeah, and what? Like, how many people get kicked out of a normal Yankee Stadium experience? What, 70? 52 people a night? Yeah, it is the Bronx, after all. But, no, the guy didn't get kicked out for being drunk or fighting, abusive language, etc. A dude got kicked out because he was yelling what pitches he thought were coming next to Yankee batters. So in the eighth inning, Gary Sanchez, and he was doing it through the game, but specifically, you know, when Gary Sanchez was batting, and Sanchez speaks Spanish, a Spanish voice was in the stands yelling, you know, outside, outside, you know, away, away. And basically a dude in the stands was watching the pitcher and the catcher, and he was watching Wilson Ramos, and he was watching the catcher, and you know, he was stealing the signs, and he was yelling it in, and he got kicked out. The umpire turned around, you know, who's doing this, and they booted the guy out of the baseball park. Now, I don't really get this, and this is the stupidest thing I've ever freaking heard of in my life, man. It's ridiculous. This is ridiculous as Elaine Benes getting booted from Yankee Stadium for wearing a Baltimore hat. So if I go to a football game and I'm yelling, they're going to run. They're going to run the ball. They're going deep. They're going deep. Do I get kicked out for trying to aid and abet? And since when does it matter what some jackass in the stand says? You think Gary Sanchez is thinking, you know, I'm expecting a curveball here, but, man, that drunk guy's yelling that it's going to be a slider. Yeah. Like Gary Sanchez thinking, yeah, I'm going to listen to this guy. Like, it's freaking ridiculous. It's America. Freedom of speech, remember? If you want to go to a baseball game and yell outside, it's going to be outside all day. Who freaking cares? That's what fans do. I get it, man. If you're using abusive language, if you're wasted and you're offending people, I understand. You don't have a right to say anything in a stadium. You know, I get that. I'm not one of the, oh, I paid for my ticket so I can act like a jackass. But you sort of can act like a jackass as long as you don't use offensive language. And, you know, to me, a guy yelling away, away, or the pitch is going to be outside, and you get kicked out is freaking the stupidest thing that I've ever heard of. But as I stated, man, we're living in the stupidest era of mankind ever. So I guess nothing should surprise me. But you know what? You know what they say, and I believe that Ice-T said this. Yeah, freedom of speech exists. Just watch what you say, and I guess where you say it. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues.
In 2016, Scott Engel predicted an impressive second season from Melvin Gordon. Jake Seeley recommended Jordan Howard. Bobby McMahon forecasted a Jay Ajayi breakthrough. George Kurtz saw a big year coming from Matt Ryan. And Joe Galina picked Rishard Matthews as one of his top sleepers. These predictions turned fantasy owners into champions, and the same crew returns this year with more savvy calls in the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package at rotoexperts.com. Don't miss the calls that create winners. Register now and enter free radio at checkout for a special discount.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I'm still baffled by this story. I really am. Like, I don't understand how a fan can get kicked out for yelling his opinion. If he thinks it's going to be low and away, it's his right to yell low and away. And it's not helping anybody. Gary Sanchez of the Yankees even stated it was a distraction. He said, yeah, I heard the guy, but I, you know, I just blocked him out. He goes, fans are always yelling crazy things. So, you know, does anybody really think? So if you go to a basketball game and you tell somebody, hey, you know, weak side, you're standing courtside, you get booted out. I don't understand this. Like, what world are we living in here right now, man? It's 2017. It's amazing to me, man. But, man, a ton of stuff going on. Right, we got Emery Hunt going to join us, Rich Cerminello, Mark Lawrence bats a leadoff. Mark was one of the few people in the state of Florida that wasn't arrested yesterday. Right, how you doing, Mark?
I'm doing pretty good, Gabe. I'm staying one step ahead of the law right now, as you just mentioned here, and enjoying it.
Yeah, you know, really. It's funny. Yesterday I was talking. I'm like, I'm really surprised the cops in Gainesville didn't just sweep this under the carpet and tell the kids, don't do this again. But it turns out, like, the feds are involved and state police and stuff. And once you get into the fraud and impersonation and falsifying identities, Gainesville police can't save you anymore.
No, it's, it's all about the law, I guess, and political correctness, per se. And as you mentioned on the show about things you can and cannot say, we got a little taste of that with the NFL national anthem, racist issues that were going on in the NFL last week. And everybody has a right to freedom of speech. I guess it's a matter of, you know, whether you're going to desecrate what America holds true, and that's the American flag and the manner in which you're doing it. So a lot of bandwagon barnstorming going on right now. Politically correct or politically incorrect, it's all something to talk about.
Yeah, well, freedom of speech, Mark. I heard a guy that covered wars for years, like a Pulitzer Prize guy. It's not a sports guy or anything. Pulitzer Prize covered wars and revolutions for like 50 years. And he said, one thing I learned covering revolutions all over the world, he goes, everybody loves democracy and freedom of speech unless they don't like your opinion. and then it's different. It's all, nah, but this is different, right? So I guess that's what we're learning right now, the freedom of speech stuff, that freedom of speech means freedom of speech, right? Whether it's someone kneeling or whether it's some dumbass Nazi walking down the street in Virginia. But, you know, we're living in a crazy world right now. So, you know, Florida Gators, right, these kids are out of control. These kids are out of control. You know, one kid, $20,000, 30 felony counts. You know, you steal a credit card once, sorry, coach. Ah, you know, it was a mistake. 30 times, like, you know, they were running a credit card fraud ring, okay? Like, you know, there were 9 kids on the team were running a credit card fraud ring. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. So I don't sympathize with them. And I'm not sympathizing with the college basketball guys. But at the same point in time, is this where we're at right now? Like, do the feds don't have anything better to do than to be shaking down assistant coaches and shoe companies? This is part of the fabric of America, Mark. I mean, really? I mean, we better start building a lot of jails because everyone's going to jail soon.
Well, you know, law runs the country here. And unfortunately, there's lawyers that represent the law, and they're out there making their own case for their own greed to build their own bankrolls. So that's what we see a lot of here, are these cases for lawyers to make their claim and fame. Unfortunately, it's what happens when you live in a country like this where, you know, law prevails over everything. It's a shame because it's taking the focus off of what we're here to talk about. That's sports.
Yeah.
You know, you pay to play, to watch players play the game, not for all of everything else that's going on around the game itself. Let's cut this BS out and let's focus in on the games. Let's look at the games, make them the number one prime focus here.
Yeah, that is true. But the media is like a dog in a bone, right? Racial stuff sells, Mark, you know? That's why, you know, you look at the presidential election and the ratings and it's carried over. They just want to keep this stuff going right into the next election. Keep everybody hot, you know? Yeah. Let's keep it rolling. Controversy. All right, so let's try to build our own bankroll and take care of our own greed right now, Mark. With the Bears and the Packers on Thursday night football, usually I'd be, you know, I'm not a big fan of laying 7 in these spots, but my first reaction was the line's a little short, actually. I'm surprised the Bears are getting this much respect. It's Mike Glennon versus Aaron Rodgers. We saw, yeah, the Bears are good at home, but we saw they got tattooed on the road earlier in the year against Tampa. And the fact of the matter is, you know, the Packers have owned the Bears, man. 15-4 straight up, 14-5 against the spread the last 19. Aaron and McCarthy they've hunted the Bears successfully.
Well, this line is a little bit short, Gabe, especially based on what Jay Cornegay sent out from the Westgate lines 1 week in advance. And I think a lot of that is due to the fact that the Green Bay Packers are a very injured, beat-up, battered football team. I think that's what this number comes in a little bit short at. But, you know, like you said in an overview, you talked about you're looking at this game and you're making a decision here. You either lay it or you pray it. I love that line, lay or pray in this football game. You're praying if you take the Chicago Bears in this contest because in Aaron Rodgers, he feasts on division opponents at home. That's where he's absolute best. And you got the Chicago Bears off a win on a short rest period here to get ready for this game. I don't think so. I think this line comes down. It makes it a comfortable Green Bay lay.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers, 36-17 against the spread at home versus division opponents, 40-13 straight up, courtesy of Mark Lawrence's playbook database. And yeah, you like that, Mark. I'm glad to see you're paying attention. Because you know what? Over the years, right, it's lay or pass. And I was thinking it's lay, or if you're taking the Bears, you're praying. It's a leap, it's a leap of faith. So it's lay it or pray it. I mean, you know, feel free to use it moving forward, Marcus. I like you that much.
You're going to see that in the playbook a whole lot moving forward, believe me.
Yeah, lay it or pray it. Exactly. Yes. It's a great one. Hey, after years, we came up with something new. Okay, so Eagles and Chargers here. And I saw a courtesy in a coffee club today. Since last December, the Bolts are now 1-11 straight up, 110-1 against the spread at home, carrying over San Diego into the preseason, into now. I'm a little bit concerned. I want to get a Melvin Gordon check, and maybe if someone in Master Control knows if we have a status check for Melvin Gordon this week. I'm kind of leaning towards the Chargers in this game, only because I think they can't. They're not going 0-16, and I don't know what the deal is. Do they play at home every week? Like, you know, this is the third straight week in a row. They're playing at home. I don't think Eagle fan takes over the stadium in the same way that the Chiefs fans did. Thing is, Phillip Rivers starting to look pretty old out there. Any injuries? Verrett's out for the year right now. I get the argument for the Eagles. I'm just not in a hurry to lay it here.
Well, you know, as you mentioned in the Coffee Club, Gabe, there's no hubbub at StubHub. This is a football team that moved from San Diego to Los Angeles and is getting zero support at home. They haven't won a preseason game. They haven't won a regular season game. They haven't sold or come close to selling out a 27,000-seat stadium. There's not a lot going on in Los Angeles about this Charger team. And I had my chance with them last week. I took a leap of faith with them against the Chiefs. This week they're in a good spot catching the Eagles off the Giants, but I can't lay points with a football team that can't win football games. Go back to the Cleveland Browns last week. You know, they put, for whatever reason, they put the Browns in the role of a favorite. It doesn't even on the road, no less. But nonetheless, it's the Chargers here who can't win football games, and until they can, I simply can't lay any kind of points with this team.
I didn't put the Bengals on the docket just because it's not, you know, we only have so much time. I want to hit the more higher profile games. For the record, I love the Bengals this week. Bengals get in the win column this week.
I do too. This is a real winnable game for Cincinnati against Cleveland. Remember, the Browns have only won one game in 20 games under Hugh Jackson here, and you got them in a win situation. You got to like the Bengals with perfect being back this week.
Okay, another team that this is an interesting one here as well. You get the Saints. The Saints were 0-2, Mark, but I don't want to repeat myself too much, but I've said this a lot over the last couple of weeks. You know, the Saints were 0-2. Not too many teams are going into Minnesota and beating the Vikings on Monday Night Football and the season opener, you know, when they're healthy and Bradford, etc. They played the pissed-off New England Patriot team coming off a loss with 10 days rest. It wasn't exactly a great scheduling spot. And I think people, the Saints are terrible, they're done. Same old BS with the Saints. And, oh, yeah, they're without Willie Snead, who they're getting back now. And no one's talking about Snead. This guy is a big factor on this offense. He's going to open up things for Michael Thomas right now on the other side of the field. And Thomas finally came alive last week. I see signs of life with this Saints team. You know, they were sort of somewhat of a trendy team coming into the year, that their defense is going to be better. They were going to turn things around. They were going to be right in the mix in this division. I'm not saying they're on the Falcons level, but I think they can play themselves back into a wild card sort of conversation here. But they got to win this football game and get back to even here. Intriguing game. And then the Dolphins, horrible, man. The Dolphins have been racking up frequent flyer miles, man. I mean, they've been flying all over the place.
Yeah, they're playing this orbits schedule, if you will, the Miami Dolphins here with all this frequent flyer miles that they're getting here right now. They won't play their first home game until next week, Gabe, because of the scheduling situation, the Hurricane Irma. And they can blame themselves next week for not taking a bye after coming back from London. So they'll go 16 straight games without rest. Shame on the Miami Dolphins for doing just that. But what this situation is, if you take the rest aside, you look at, you have New Orleans coming off of a huge win, Miami off a huge loss. It's what I call a DBO, a double blowout situation. Miami lost to the spread by 20. New Orleans won to the spread by 26. You combine those two, and what you have is value here. All of a sudden, the Saints are the favorite. They were the dog last week. Now they're the three-point favorite here. I think the line is wrong.
Now, one thing, I see some negative numbers in your playbook for both sides here. Saints are 3-9 straight up off of a win versus a team off of a loss. That's a weird one right there. But the Dolphins, 1-7 straight up, last third games of the season. And, you know, that could just be an anomaly. We talk about, you know, the gum machine, so to speak. But there's something to it. I mean, when you got a 7-1 trend here, it's hard to ignore. I was all over the Dolphins when they played the Chargers. I love the Jets last week. I like the Saints in this one, Mark. I'm going to respectfully disagree with the database. I'm going to go with the Saints here.
I can totally understand that, Gabe, especially for all the travel with Miami here. But I do know this, being down here in Miami, Adam Gase is cracking the whip as we're speaking right now. He's really on this football team, especially the offense here. Look for a high-scoring game here, by the way. I think the lack of defense for New Orleans, Miami opening the offense up this week, will lead to a lot of points.
Yeah, 49.5, it's up there. And we should note, this game's in London, of course, but I sort of assume everyone knows. Yeah, but so it's in London, this game. All right, Mark, here's one. I don't know if I'm walking into a trap here, but I'm liking the Rams. And I saw the Rams pop up at 8.5 on Monday night, and it's already down to 6.5 right now. We've got, I love what you brought up, but I didn't realize this either. 8 starters on the team that are either first or second round draft picks. You know, they got more speed than a Jamaican relay team does on this on the football field right now. And we're starting to see it. Sammy Watkins got the football, showed what he could do with it. You look at Jared Goff and the confidence level, completely different player from last week. And, yes, it's a road game. I know last week was a road game. I don't fully count it. The stadium was half empty. It was in-state. Let's call this a true road game. But, Mark, you know this. The Dallas Cowboys, you don't get rich betting on the Dallas Cowboys as home favorites. That's never been their role under Garrett before. You've got the Rams extended rest. You got the Cowboys on a ultra-short week coming into this. I think maybe the Cowboys win, but maybe they cover because they score late. I think the Rams come to play here, and the Rams are feeling good about themselves.
I think the Rams are a nice play in this football game, Gabe. Aside from everything you mentioned about Jason Garrett, the Cowboys, the scheduling factors here, you have a Rams team that's on the come right now. And look at the Green Bay schedule. Who do they have next week? They've got the Green Bay Packers on deck next week, the team that knocked them out of the playoffs last year. So you catch Dallas off that big second-half comeback Monday night win. With Green Bay on deck here, I think the Rams fit in this game really nice.
And if you guys are wondering how Garrett and the Cowboys respond after Monday nighters, oh, yeah, they're 0-8 straight up and 1-7 against the spread the last eight. And then you throw in the fact you're getting a young team, an aggressive team, a confident team with extended rest. They can look and see what Arizona did to confuse Dallas. And let's be real, Mark. This Dallas Cowboy offensive line, it has been the best in the league in the past years. It's not the best in the league right now. It just isn't. You look at the holes, Elliott, you know, Elliott's struggling, and he pops one every now and then. That's just sort of him getting on the outside. Dak Prescott has to, you know, scrambling a lot, running for his life a lot more. The Dallas Cowboy O-line isn't as good as it was last year. It just isn't.
No, it isn't, Gabe, and this is purely a name and reputation type of a football game here. I'm going to best guess by the time everybody has a chance to handicap and look this game in thoroughly, you're going to see this number come down against the Dallas Cowboys rather than grow this particular week for all the situations we just talked about.
Yeah, and they've just informed me in Master Control that some sixes are popping up right now already. And just to put this in context, guys, the Cowboys were on the football field on Monday night, so the odds makers were waiting to post the game. I was tracking it live. Boom, came out at Bet Online at 8.5. A couple other spots had it at 8.5. We're going to be seeing sixes out there right now. And very similar, you know what it reminds me of, Mark? Last week with the Cincinnati Bengals and the Packers. Opened up at 9. Johnny Public laughed at me all week when I said the number was too high. Ended up closing at 6, Mark.
Yep, that's exactly
right. And who covered? The Bengals.
That's exactly right. The Bengals got the money. A lot of injury situation for Green Bay, but a lot of reason for Cincinnati to play in that game. A lot of reasons for Dallas not to play in this game.
All right, I love my dogs, man, and I'm a Buffalo Bill fan. But. Listen, the Bills' defense is real good, but the Steel Curtain Steelers wouldn't be able to stop this Falcon team on their home field, and I mean that. All right, sacrilege. No, I meant what I said. the number surprises me a little bit. I thought this one was a little low, actually. A lot of respect for the Bills. The Bills are one of these teams where I think at home they can beat anybody in the league, Mark. On the road, you're going to go, God, this offense is bad. It's one of these weird deals. Tyrod Taylor just comes alive, man, in Western New York. He just does. Look on the road against the Panthers. They couldn't score a touchdown. They might hang around for a quarter or so here. Even if Atlanta sucks, they'll wake up and still pull away. I got to lay the price here with the Dirty Bird.
I do too, Gabe. You're talking about the best role for NFL teams that are 3-0 to begin the season. That's as home favorites when they're not laying double digits. 28-4 straight up, 24-8 to the spread. That's the role for Atlanta this week. It's a host in this game. And remember, the Bills, while they've gotten out to this 2-1 start, they were outstated in two of those three football games, and you hit it right on the head. A dichotomy-type football team, bar none, that the Buffalo Bills, good at home, terrible on the road.
Okay, Mark, we've only got a minute time here. Interesting, because I was thinking about this game yesterday when I saw the line, and I thought to myself, well, Notre Dame blew out Temple. Notre Dame beat Boston College. That loss to Georgia looks better and better every week. Impressive win on the road at Sparty. I'm like, only 21 here, but you think this could be a flat spot for the Irish, and you think the Redhawks come in here with some potential?
It's a game of the year for Miami of Ohio, Gabe. Notre Dame bowing down to their level, only the third time they'll have played a MAC team in their football history. And remember, the Irish were out-yarded 141 yards in that win over Michigan State last week. This is a real sweet spot for a very experienced Miami, Ohio football team.
And finally, in closing, quickly on this one, Thursday night football, Longhorns and Iowa State. Finally, we have a decent football game to watch collegiately on Thursday night. Listen, Tom Herman's a legend with the Vegas types and the gamblers when he's an underdog. But he's cost people money. 0-7 is a conference favorite with 29 or less. So if he's playing a patsy, he'll get it. And now you got coach. Everybody talks about Herman. Hey, I'm a big Matt Campbell fan, too. Remember him at Toledo? Big money maker. 6-2 is a dog with the Cyclones, too.
At home, taking points 6-2, as you said, Gabe. Look at Texas, the other side. Last five times they've been road favorites in conference play. They've only won one game straight up. This is a real nice spot for Iowa State. Under those Thursday night primetime lights, I see the upset in this football game with the Cyclones.
Yeah, we're going to talk about this game later in the show, actually, but Iowa State have pulled off a couple of big upsets in this spot before. Lost by Texas by one, actually, a couple of years ago. Remember, they beat Oklahoma State, too, on a Thursday nighter. Always a pleasure. Check out Mark Lawrence's playbook.com if you want to win money this week. Available on your mobile device, the Playbook Cube. Go to the Google Store. Always a pleasure, Mark.
Hey, my pleasure, Gabe. Enjoy the games. I'll catch you next week.
There's Mark Lawrence with us. Emery Hunt joins me next. We continue talking football.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things. Just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Game time decisions on Fantasy Sports Network. I'm getting bad flashbacks, man, about this Bengal-Packer game right now. Dear God, Dalton. I didn't rip Dalton on Who Ruined Your Sunday because he's getting a little old. And they did cover the point spread. They covered. But you had LaFell in the end zone open. You overthrew him. That would have been a dagger. I can't blame you for the fact that Joe Mixon fell. I don't know. I guess there's a chick in Oklahoma that got a laugh out of that when he fell. you had LaFell. And then you had A.J. Green in the slot open. I assume Andy Dalton's not a big fan of Tony Romo. I said, I love it. And you know, some people think, oh, Romo, I don't like Romo's in the booth. I think Romo's doing a great job. Just like Emery Hunt does a great job. Footballgameplan.com's Emery Hunt. What's up, Emery?
What's going on, Gabe?
Have you heard Romo in the booth? You had a chance? I know you're always out and about at games and stuff, but have you heard Romo?
Yeah, Romo sounds great, man. And the reason why he sounds good in the booth is the fact that he doesn't take himself too seriously. He's very secure in his own football knowledge. And I think that's the key. When you know that you know the game, and you're able to keep it conversational and have fun while you're out there, it makes you feel as though you're there watching a game with a friend. So he's done a great job so far.
Yeah, he does. He's a fun guy. That's the thing. You can tell he's not burnt out. You know, I got the impression as soon as they went to a commercial break, you know, Phil Simms just started yelling at the interns and stuff. Where's my Diet Coke? just sort of a grumpy old dude. Romo's got that enthusiasm he brings to the table. And I love the quarterback perspective that he brings. You know, not a lot of guys will do that. I like where, you know, he basically states, you got to call an audible here if you're the cornerback. You know, there's six guys there. You got to recognize this. You know, I've never heard an analyst before, after a run play, say, the quarterback's got to call an audible there because the run had no chance. And he did it right away. You could hear his frustration. I loved it. You know, Mixon got nailed. And he just said, come on, Andy. He had no chance on that play. You got to recognize it's a safety blitz. And it's amazing to recognize the things that Andy Dalton doesn't recognize. But I don't have 2 hours to talk about Dalton right now. Let's talk about the New York Giants. End of the line. 0-3 teams have a 2% chance of making the playoffs. Only one 0-4 team in the history of the league ever made the playoffs, the 1992 San Diego Chargers. But this year's a little bit different in the sense nobody's 3-0 in their division. They locked this game down. They still have a puncher's chance to stay in this thing. And then, you know what's amazing to me? And I'm not a big Eli guy, and I knew about the offense struggling, so I'm not surprised they have the worst rushing attack in the league, but I'm surprised, Emery, they can't stop anybody from rushing the ball on them.
Yeah, it's just a sense that their offense can't sustain drive, so you're putting the defense back out there, and that wears a defense down. And if you're a defense, you want your offense to at least flip the field position or chew up at least 4 to 5 minutes of a drive so that way you can get adjusted, you can get rested, and get out there and make stops. So that's the biggest key right now. Their offense, we're starting to show some life in the second half of that Eagles game. They need that offense to start the game this week against Tampa Bay.
So what do you make of them? Tampa, I don't want to be too hard on Tampa. I didn't like the way they played last week. They were in the football game until the national anthem was over, okay? And then I don't mean anything, I swore I wasn't going to do any of the protest stuff. So when I say national anthem, I had nothing to do with any of the protest stuff. I'm just basically stating they weren't in the game from the get-go, man. They weren't ready to play. You know, they look good against the Bears in week one. They've only played two games. So I sort of don't have the same barometer I do on some of these other football teams, if you know what I'm saying. And I'm not a big Dirk Koetter fan. I don't picture Dirk Koetter in the NFC Conference Championship game. I don't picture the Bucs and Dirk Koetter in the Super Bowl. And I'm starting to wonder about Winston now, if he just is what he is. That, you know, to me, I look at Winston, Emery, and I don't see much of a different quarterback today than I did in year one. And he was good in year one. He's okay now. But is he going to take this next level? This is a massive game for both these football teams, Emery. It really is, isn't it?
I think it's an even more massive game for a guy like Eli Apple. Right now, he's the weak link of that Giants defense. And you're facing a team that has DeSean Jackson and also Mike Evans and two tight ends. So this Giants secondary, which is good, is going to be put to the limit from a schematic standpoint. I think the biggest difference in this ball game will come down to which team can you trust to run the football. So I know the spread says Tampa's are 3-point favorites, and I will have to ride with that and say go ahead on and lay the points with the Buccaneers.
I agree with you. It's a tough one. It's a tough game to cap. There's going to be a lot of Giant fans there. There's always Giant fans when they play in Florida, obviously. It's going to be a lot of Giant fans there. It's going to be a great atmosphere. The Bucs need this game. They're 1-2. Dirk Koetter is going to be in the hot seat pretty early, and people are going to be wondering the same things about Winston that I was just talking about. I think the Bucs can find a way to win this football game. You know, too many problems with the Giants, man. As you mentioned, Eli Apple's struggling. The O-line struggling. Eli's struggling. They don't have a ground game. They can't stop the run. There's just too many. Oh, yeah, McAdoo's play calling. That's six negatives that I just spit off the top of my head, Emery, with the Giants.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate because their defense is their calling card. And when you have a guy out there in Eli Apple that struggles to find the football, guess what? They're going to throw at him constantly. He is either going to turn around and find the ball eventually, or he's going to give up a lot of pass interference penalties, holding penalties, or give up a lot of big gains. His dropped interception or missed interception was the reason why the Eagles got in field goal range, quite honestly.
You think Odell will be able to refrain from urinating this week? A urination celebration? Like, that was the worst celebration ever. I'd actually respect someone more if they just whipped it out and did just take a leak on the field. Instead of, like, stomping on the logo, that'd be hardcore. No, yeah. We like the Dodgers. The Dodgers, they clinch. They don't like the D-backs, Emery. And the D-backs have a stupid, like, hot tub pool in the outfield. And the Dodgers, when they won, they celebrated in the pool. And then after, they said, and for the record, yeah, we pissed in it. Like they told Arizona, yeah, but we did piss. They had a line. You might want to clean your pool up, Arizona. Arizona were like, you guys are scumbags. Yeah, you guys are supposed to be classy, the L.A. Dodgers. They don't like each other. Okay, so I've been telling you, man, best team in the city, gangrene, man, New York Jets. I called it last week. I didn't say they're going to win outright. I said they're going to take this team to the brink. It's going to come down to the wire. Love the Jets plus the points last week. I think the Jags beat them this week. I just think the Jags are a better football team. Although I don't like that London, you know, coming back from London's tough. But it's amazing, isn't it, Emery? If the Jags win, they're going to be 3-1. If the Jets win, they're 2-2. Neither of which anybody thought was possible coming into this year.
And what's interesting about the Jaguars is that they were supposed to have a bye week, you know, coming back from a London game, but they didn't have that bye week in their schedule. And so that's going to be interesting to see how they adjust to playing the Jets. And we just saw probably the best game that Blake Bortles has ever played in his career. And that's a big reason why they were able to straight dominate the Baltimore Ravens. Can he have an encore performance? That's what we'll be watching for in his ball game against the Jets. And shout out to the Jets because, again, defensively, they were there throughout the entire game. with the Miami Dolphins. Offensively, they did what they had to do. And if they can play complementary football like that, then they could be a serious player in this division as far as the second-place team is concerned.
All right, Raiders and Broncos. Who do you like in that game, though? The Jags and the Jets. Who are you going to take to win?
I like Jacksonville, man. I think their defense – I think there's mirror teams. Both have questionable quarterback play. But I would give Blake Bortles the benefit of the doubt to get it going once again.
Somewhat of a homecoming as well for Tom Coughlin. Not against the Giants, but nevertheless, same stadium. Raiders, Broncos, both teams coming off of losses. Listen, we saw the Dallas Cowboys get punched in the mouth against Denver and then bounce back. Although it wasn't pretty, they found a way. Although I think Dak Prescott deserves all the credit for that win. So the Raiders got humiliated. And, you know, I had a guest on yesterday, brought up a good point. He goes, if you look at the games the Raiders lost last year, when they fell behind, they sort of tapped out. They never really dug down deep and fought back. Something to consider with the Raiders. Are they front runners? Do they have guys on their team? You know, we saw Crabtree and Cooper dropping balls. Suddenly the alligator arms came out later in the game. They didn't seem very interested to dig down deep. The Raiders' defense were getting humiliated. See, they were fired up on the sidelines. But the Raiders' offense, real flat. I was disappointed in Carr. They didn't dig down and lead these guys out of that rut that they were in. Then you get the Broncos coming off a tough road loss. They weren't embarrassed. You know, they played a tough game against Buffalo. Now they go back home. I think the point spread's too short here. And it's 2.5. And I think it's only 2.5 because people don't trust Trevor Siemian. But, you know, I don't have a problem with Trevor Siemian. And Trevor Simeon's better at home than he is on the road. I think the Broncos get it done here.
Yes, I can understand why that point spread is low, but I like the Raiders in this game. I think ultimately the better team will win. They are better overall. They have the better quarterback, and you mentioned it. A lot of people don't trust Trevor Siemian. We saw him turn back into a pumpkin last week he laid an egg, which is why they lost that ball game. So I think that's more of who he is. So you'll see him revert back to the mean. And I think that means Oakland will win this game outright.
All right, we've only got a minute left here. I want to get your quick take on Clemson and Virginia Tech. Everybody in these big games always picks against Clemson. It's almost trendy. Wow, this is the week. And they're always underpriced. Yet, it looks like the odds makers have adjusted. Because if I'm setting the odds here, I make Clemson a 3 or 4 point road favorite instead of a 7 point road favorite. I think they feel like they got burnt against Louisville, and it's a similar situation. I think Virginia Tech, they're a more complete team than Louisville. Fuente is a dangerous guy. Saturday night, Blacksburg. I think Virginia Tech are a real live dog here in this football game. I think they give Clemson all they can handle.
Yeah, they will. And again, we saw Boston College give Clemson all they can handle last week until Clemson started to pull away. I think ultimately in games like this, the better team will come out and prevail. And Virginia Tech's solid right now. I don't think they have the defense that Clemson has, and I don't think they have enough to where they can slow down his offense of the Tigers and get these guys off the field. I think Clemson's defense is stout, very good, top three in the country, and also their offense will do a great job of moving this football down the field. Remember, in week one, we saw West Virginia have their way with this Virginia Tech defense. I think Clemson will do the same. I would say Clemson will win this one easily.
Wow, Clemson wins easily. All right, we got to get out of here, but it's always a pleasure, Emory. Check out Emory Hunt on Twitter, and check out his site, footballgameplan.com. Thanks, Emory.
Thanks, Gabe.
There's Emory Hunt with us. We'll take a quick break. Rich Sermonello joins me next.
Quarterback to receiver hookups, running back depth analysis, rookie values in dynasty leagues, deep sleepers, training camp battles. These are just a few of the in-depth features you will find inside the 2017 RotoExperts.com Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package. Plus, you get a full year of in-season coverage as a bonus. Get the Exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package now at RotoExperts.com. Enter free radio at checkout for your special discount.
Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenzo. Let's talk some college football as we do every Saturday morning from 9 to 12 on the Fantasy Sports Television and Radio Networks and the Dish Network College Football Today. Rich Sermonello, Joe Lisi. I joined the crew twice throughout the 3 hours with my best bets of the day. It's been very, very profitable for those of you that have tuned in last week, early game. Told you, NC State plus the points. I didn't think they were going to go in there and win that game outright. Conversely, I think Florida State are going to kick the crap out of Wake Forest this week. I wouldn't want to be Wake on Saturday. But nevertheless, let's bring in Rich Sermonello right now. Rich, it's always a pleasure, my man. How you doing?
Thanks for having me on, Gabe. Doing well.
So, Rich, it was quite the day in the collegiate sports world yesterday. And even today, Rick Pitino and the AD of Louisville are out. Yep. And I think, you know, that story sort of overshadowed the fact that the 9 Florida Gator players that were suspended, 10 guys suspended, 9 of them charged with felonies, credit card fraud, falsifying identities, impersonation, which I sort of assume was the same thing, but nevertheless, you know, wire fraud. We go down the list, all right? Real felonies. One of the kids get hit with 30 felonies. You know, not all of them were stars, but Jordan Scarlett, Antonio Callaway were amongst the players, their best running back and best wide receiver. Yep. And, you know, obviously, I'm not going to say anyone's lucky in this, but the fact that Rick Pitino is such a big fish and that college stuff is just such a, oh, my God. We're used to college kids getting arrested or suspended. We're not used to assistant coaches and Adidas and Rick Pitino. I mean, that's a major story that's just getting started.
Yeah.
I think from a national landscape, the Florida story sort of flew under the radar a little bit because of it.
I think it's been flying under the radar since the Michigan game, to be honest with you. I think we've sort of forgotten about it at this point. We've moved on from Antonio Callaway, Jordan Scarlett. I think the issue, Gabe, and you know this, you've been around the sports landscape long enough. I think, and I'm not in any way giving a pass to bad behavior or illegal behavior. These individuals know what they're doing, but there's so much money flowing through college athletics right now. The arms race is such that people have and always have been looking to bend the rules in order to get an edge. That's from an administrative standpoint, whether it's Adidas, whether it's an assistant coach. But in terms of the Florida players, again, not giving them a pass, I have to point that out again. But when you have so much money in college athletics and these kids are not participating in that, and a lot of these kids are coming from impoverished backgrounds, I'm not giving a pass, but I'm saying that there's going to be a black market that develops, because in the case of the Florida players, what they were doing in a lot of instances, fraudulent, yes, but what they were doing is they were buying electronics at the bookstore and then going out and selling them at a profit. To me, that almost seems a little bit entrepreneurial, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Very creative. You're right. Entrepreneur 101. 101. It's a good point. And one thing with the college basketball thing that sort of upset me, too, was the fact that the rifleman, Chuck Person. So you got a former NBA guy. You've already made your money. You're making more money. You're an assistant on a big-time program at Auburn. You're taking $40,000 to manipulate the mind of a kid.
Yep.
You know, so you're going to make $40,000 to buddy up to a kid and then steer him in a certain direction to an agent, steer him in a certain direction. And it just goes to show the kids aren't getting anything out of this. They're just the little puppets and tools, right?
It's unconscionable.
And everyone's going to say, though, and Rich, they're going to say, I keep seeing all these big-time college guys, writers. This is going to change the landscape. This is going to clean things up. Yeah,
never
and
happened.
Ultimately, the kids will still be broke.
Yeah, it's never going. You know, saying that college athletics are going to be cleaned up, Gabe, is like saying that Washington, D.C. is going to be cleaned.
That's I'll wait for Israel and Palestine to settle their differences
it's
first.
Not going to. We ought to forget about it. The fact is we're going to have issues like this 5 years from now, 10 years from now. There's too much money, too much power at stake. What really bothers me is I've been around these kids for the past 15 years covering college athletics. And what really breaks my heart is these kids and these families, in a lot of cases, especially in instances where they're single parent families, they don't have the expertise, the ability, the time to properly direct their sons and daughters to the right program. So they go to a Chuck Person, they go to a former pro, looking for that guidance and that tutelage. And when they get sold out, it really bothers me, because these young individuals, they need guidance, and when they don't get it, it's a real shame.
And not to mention, I know, and I don't want to, like the Bowens kid's mother, you know, she's getting harassed now by the media and stuff. She's a poor lady, you know, the NCAA rules and everything, some agent, shady stuff, and just like you said, it's an ugly situation. Okay, so from a football standpoint here, doesn't really affect the Florida Gators. These, you know, you can't miss what you didn't have. Right? These kids, they weren't playing on this team. And man, I hate to use the term, you're a class guy, but I don't have a choice. They've fallen ass backwards into two wins in a row here.
Isn't that Florida, though? I mean, that has been Florida under Jim McElwain. It's never pretty.
They're the worst. They played in two straight championship games. I know.
And you know what? You look at Jim McElwain. 9 of the last 10 one-possession games involving Florida, Gators have won. Wow. I mean, Notre Dame would kill for that.
That can't be a coincidence, I guess, right, at that point? I mean,
I don't think it's a coincidence. I think it's good late-game coaching. I think it's having those kids prepared for clutch situations. They might – I don't think they will. I think Georgia's the best team in the SEC East, but Florida just finds a way. I think they find a way against Vandy this week, Gabe. I don't think they cover, though. I think it's too many points. Last week in Nashville was more about an angry Alabama team than a Vanderbilt team that got exposed. They got housed 59-0. I still believe in Vandy to be a really interesting fly in the ointment in the SEC East. Good defense. Quarterback that's improving. They have to start to run the ball better with Ralph Webb. But to me, I think this is a scrum. Both teams in the teens, maybe 19, 13. Yep. Eddie Pinero of Florida wins it with a field goal. But I would take the points in this game.
Yeah, I think, as you stated, people have short attention spans, and they always remember what they saw last. So they saw Vanderbilt's a fraud. They got tattooed. As you said, I think the Dallas Cowboys would have lost to that Bama team last week. It was more of, I totally agree with you, it was more of Bama. They went through the motions, very similar to Michigan. Went through the motions against Cincinnati and Air Force. Yeah. Kids on Purdue talking. All right, let's see what happens. Same thing. You know, kids on Vanderbilt, you're in our house now. All right. Plus, Saban was in an angry mood. And plus, you know, Saban likes to send a message to SEC opponents. Hey, this is what you guys are in for.
Hey, listen, Gabe. Alabama heard all week that Clemson, and you heard it throughout the media, right?
Yeah.
Clemson now, Clemson's the true number one. They're the defending national champs. Let's put them at number one. Enough with Alabama being number one. And I think that really pissed off Nick Saban and his players. And I think that's the beauty of Alabama. When you get them in a tirade, when you get them fired up, that's what you see last week.
But that's why I told people. That's why I told people they were going to cover it 2 weeks before, because Saban's a pro and he understands he can't yell at them every week. He's got to let them have fun sometimes in practice.
He knows when to flip the switch. He knows it.
That's why Saban, you know, he's like, he's 1-13 now. The last 14 times he's laid 28 or more points. Doesn't interest him. I should note, in non-conference play, conference play is different. All right, we've only got 1 minute literally here, Rich. Friday night, fun game up there in Pullman. I stand by my belief. I keep thinking that Washington State are an overrated program. I guess they can shut me up on Friday night. What's your take?
I think they might. I think it's impossible to shut you up. I think the world doesn't want to shut you up, to be honest with you. But listen, I've been talking about this game since the spring. I circled it. I think Friday night in Pullman, Washington State is close to a complete football team. They're more than Mike Leach, more than that passing game. They play defense. They create turnovers. They could run the ball. I think they upset USC.
Big problems for USC. Listen, Ronald Jones is going to play, but I didn't like the I'm going to give it my best.
Yeah.
Basically. And like defense I respect
banged
the
up too. Yeah. Defense is banged up as well. I know. I think this is a bear trap for USC.
And I'm seeing that their leading wide receiver Deonte Burnett could be out of this football game as well.
Yeah, and listen, Sam Darnold is a tremendous next-level quarterback. Not all of the picks are his problem, but 7 interceptions so far this season. He's going to throw at least 2 more, especially with Hercules Mata'afa in his face for much of Friday night.
We got to get out of here, but he's clearly feeling the pressure, trying to do too much or live up to the – he knows everyone's looking at him, and he seems to be aiming the ball a little bit. Sort of like when pitchers, he's aiming, not throwing. We got to get out of here. Thanks, Rich.
Thanks, Gabe.
Yeah, Darnold will be just fine. Tough game on Friday. We'll come back when it plays today.
In 2016, Scott Engel predicted an impressive second season from Melvin Gordon. Jake Seeley recommended Jordan Howard. Bobby McMahon forecasted a Jay Ajayi breakthrough. George Kurtz saw a big year coming from Matt Ryan. And Joe Galina picked Rishard Matthews as one of his top sleepers. These predictions turned fantasy owners into champions, and the same crew returns this year with more savvy calls in the exclusive Edge Fantasy Football Package at rotoexperts.com. Don't miss the calls that create winners. Register now and enter free radio at checkout for a special discount.
All right, I got to be really fast here. No joke. I think the Minnesota Twins are worth a look at plus 150. They're really, really hot right now. Milwaukee Brewers, they need the win to be getting it done. Homer Bailey hasn't been terrible, but I'm going to take the Brewers, and we're going to keep on riding the Halos. I hate laying the 85 cents, but I'm going to do it. May the winners be yours.